Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, you guys still here?
Oh, we're still here. John.
We are. Hey.
What a great start.
John, we lost John.
No, did we lose him?
We may have. All right. Hey, it is Wednesday night.
Todd,
welcome to Pop Culture
Bar.
What?
Well,
oh,
somebody
we are
doing
off
a, somebody,
to a rolling start.
Somebody
yeah,
do an opening.
Yeah, we did. Welcome to Pop Culture Stars. It is Wednesday night. This is one of your co-hosts. This is Todd. I'm up here in the northern outpost of Indianapolis, Indiana, getting ready to have a nice freezing night. We had literally freezing fog this morning. Really thick ice and frost going on while we had fog that lasted until roughly 4 p.m. today. It's a heck of a
oh
way to start the week. And
yeah, great.
Our other host, what has was long my hometown in Jacksonville, North Carolina, David Atwell. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, can you guys hear me all right tonight?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, okay, good deal. That'll work. Just want to check. No, everything's going great here. I am enjoying a wonderful cigar from Godfather Cigars here in Jacksonville. And starting to get a little bit chilly, but it still helps keep my favorite malt beverage with the blue ribbon on it cold. And looking for a good show tonight. And should have a lot to carry on with. And we do have our esteemed leader back in the building after we went through our little technical issues. So much
am
for
I,
our amateur production, right? Yeah, you're back on. So, please.
Then I'm going to say good evening and welcome to Pop Culture Stars. This is
Dr. Machine, baby.
In route between Florence, South Carolina, and Myrtle Beach, and I obviously dropped the signal on a tower. So it's great to be here. Todd, thanks for taking over and letting us know you're here. Dave, we know you're having a malt beverage. And Liz may or may not be with us. We love Liz, the queen of sparkle. There's only one. Now, but now, are you ready? You will not believe what happened to me last night. I've got to tell this story before I introduce one of my favorite guests and one of my best friends in the world. Last night, I was staying in Greenville, South Carolina, because I was out in Georgia working on my Comic-Cons. So I got back to my buddy's apartment. He was kind enough to let me use his couch. He said, so, but what do you want to watch on television? So I decided to be a real jerk. I've never seen the show before. I said, let's watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And he said, what? And I just sat there with my malt beverage, and I watched him fumble around through Hulu and Netflix. And all of a sudden, he put it on, and I was about to die laughing. I don't know what it is, but anything with a name like that would have to be just inappropriate for adults. Well, after 15 minutes, we were so engrossed in that thing, and I said, Zach, how many awards has this thing won? He said, looked on his phone, he said, oh, my God, it won 13 awards the first year. I said, this is really cool. It was great. So if you haven't seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, don't think it's for a bunch of people that would watch a soap opera. It's incredible. I feel like an idiot. I'm the last person in the world that has not seen it. I bet some of you haven't either, but that's okay. So now that is my realization of the week. Tonight we have, as I said, one of my very best friends and a true leader in the film industry in North Carolina, the one, the only, Anthony Dowling. How are you, Anthony?
Dun, da, da. I am fine. How are you doing? And
good,
John, I just wanted to say your story is a wonderful example of a popular saying. We've all heard it. Never judge a book or a show by its cover or its title.
Or its name. That's exactly right. The thing sounded like a bad version of The Bold and the Beautiful, the soap opera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It did, and I said, this is terrible. It has to be terrible. And it was so good, I forgot that I was playing a joke on Zach. But he won't watch horror films, so, I mean, you know, I'm kind of stuck just playing jokes on it. But anyway, you're right, Anthony. You've learned a lot in the film business. You've been in it over 20 years, I think, and you are the head honcho executive director of Eno River Media, a very fine organization of which I have a shadowy and dubious past due to my lack of time, but I think Eno River Media is a great institution, and you've had it for a long time. And now, Anthony, you brought a friend on.
Apparently, I brought a guest.
He's very talented, unlike all of us. So tell us about it.
Well, for your listening audience, I do want to give a little plug to Eno River Media. We're based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. We've been around for 20 years, going on 21 in March, and we advocate for the growth of the movie and television industry in North Carolina. And one of the major things we do is work with the legislature to help guide them on policy issues for the movie and television industry. But we also network a lot of folks together. That's one of our big efforts. Networking directors, producers. We're actually going to be coming up with something a little later that I'll talk to you guys about. But in one of these, making a movie in this modern day and age takes a lot of different skill sets. And one of the coolest skill set that a lot of young folks are kind of drifting toward because of various reasons, is animation, 2D, 3D, just being, you know, being able to draw well. But usually it kind of goes into animation. And one of the up-and-coming guys in animation, I had the privilege of meeting just recently, and his name's Jeremiah. He is with us. He's one of our guests tonight. And I thought we could talk a little bit about where he's from, what he's done, and he had some cool examples for me of how animation is used in movies that you would not necessarily suspect. And I thought we might be able to go off that and see what type of conversation we could have.
Sounds great. Hey, Jeremiah, how's it going?
Not too bad, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
What's up?
So hey, we're ecstatic to have you.
Absolutely.
Jeremiah, where are you calling from? I didn't recognize the area.
I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay.
What is that?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm sorry. I just got off of work. I'm all over the place. I'm
all
Massachusetts.
There it is. The area code's from up north.
Well, listen, you're all over the place, all over the highway. That's great. Mine's Interstate 95. I think it goes up to you. Maybe I better watch out and drive carefully so we can finish the show.
That might be a good idea.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate that very much, Father. So anyway, Jeremiah, tell us a little bit about how'd you start your training in animation, and just fill us in. There's a big blank there, and we're interested to see what's in it.
So I started 2D animation a long time ago, back when I was in high school and middle school, drawing a bunch of anime characters that I would see in animes that I particularly liked. And it slowly traveled to going onto the computer and trying to draw it with a mouse and putzing around on the internet, seeing what other people talked about, such as on blogs and podcasts such as this. From that point, it went from 3D spaz to like learning how to do a lot of what game designers would do, the pulling up a lot of different stuff on the internet and trying to put it together.
Jeremiah, Talk to them about what 3D Spaz is.
3D Daz is pretty much building your 3D avatar, and it's an introductionary form of 3D animation or 2D animation because it has both inputs into it.
Is it a software package you buy?
Yes, it is a software package, but you do not have to buy it. You originally can use a trial or just use it for free. They do have packages you can buy on it, which will make it bigger, more ways to use the designing software, you could say.
Oh, sometimes cool. That animation software, if you're a student, college or high school student, you can often enter in a college or a student ID, and they'll discount too. Prices on that. I know, I think Photoshop does it, and there's another one, and the name's escaping me right now, but I know Microsoft Word used to be good for that too. In the event you're a college student, you could punch in your student ID, and they'll knock a certain percentage off the price.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Independent University, where I'm going to right now as a beginner graphic designer, they have given me the option for that myself, which is actually really cool. I use a lot of their designing softwares, and I've been putzing around on that myself as well, because I'm still a beginner myself, and I'm always willing to learn.
Hey, got to start somewhere for sure.
Absolutely.
So what kind of projects have you been working on with Anthony, or can you tell us?
He can't tell you.
Yeah,
oh,
I can't.
Man.
All right, Dan.
I'll cut that off right there. No.
Dan,
no.
Take that one down.
But
all right.
We can talk about.
Wait a
minute. Wait a minute.
Though.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please, Anthony.
No, I was going to go off in a different direction about anime. What's your question?
Oh, no, I was going to ask him because Jeremiah said, you know, that he was talking about things he's seen, and he just, you know, started effectively doodling, and it took him in that direction. What was it? What kind of stuff were you digging? Because I know animation for you, no doubt, it was funny you said a long time ago, and I'm laughing because I suspect that your idea of a long time ago and my idea of a long time ago, just for the record, are very different things.
Yeah, we were
13 years.
You know, I mean, my guys, my generation, heck, we were doing the little basketball player in the bottom right of the damn notebook, you know, with the little stick figure with the basketball and, you know, doing that. And we'd roll the corner of the little pages and have them move, and that was about as far as we got.
Yeah, I did a lot of that myself.
That's Disney old school stuff.
It is.
Right.
And it's a great way to really start on animation itself, really. I did a lot of flip book art myself. I actually love doing flip book art.
But here's my question to Jeremiah, and you guys may or may not know this, I would suspect, because you're kind of all in the Comic-Con world. There's a big difference between animation and anime. Anime is a type of animation.
It's a style.
Generally,
it's a
from,
style of art.
It's a, yeah, right. It's kind of from the Japanese, Chinese, maybe. The Orient,
they
don't
Japanese,
like to say Orient.
When it
Japanese.
Comes down to anime itself, it has many different type of art styles. Anime is not considered underneath one part type of art style itself. You have English anime, which you would consider Ruby, RWBY, which probably a lot of listeners know on YouTube. That's American art style anime. And then you have traditional Japanese art style anime. which is the more beautiful, some of the more mature art styles, and even Chinese itself has a lot would know as Trigun, which would be a huge one that a lot of people well know, and a few others that I can't list off the top of my head right at the moment. But anime has a lot of different art styles. It's not, like I said, it's not really particularly cornered to one style.
Well, why is that so popular nowadays?
Because it hits on a lot of teenagers. If you watch it and if you put yourself back in teenage school years where a lot of these characters are from, a lot of the characters aren't too well popular, have been picked on a lot, or are still being picked on and somehow overcome all of that, which I feel as though some of the teenagers don't grasp these days, which is where I feel as though, like, I found a lot of my love for anime.
Well, you know, speaking of that, Jeremiah, I wanted to say that, you know, there are a lot of kids who have overcome this bullying. But I think the best way for a kid to overcome bullying is to go become a black belt in karate and see how quick that'll help to overcome some bullying. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to be a comedian, you know.
Absolutely.
Don't quit your day job, John.
Anthony, as you know, I don't have a day job. I run Comic Cons and festivals and do characters. Now, what kind of a day job is that?
You're more event manager day job type guy, really.
More transaction.
It seems like a professional hobby.
Well, so
who said
he works
that?
Hard at that?
Who Jeremiah. Said that was a professional hobby? Jeremiah, I'm going to yell at you when we're done with this call. It's not a hobby. It's the hardest work I've ever done in my life.
No,
I actually
attend to plenty of Comic-Cons myself. I've been to a lot of Comic-Cons up on the East Coast in New York and Massachusetts, all the way down to New Jersey. I love it.
That's okay. Well, I tell you what, I'll invite you to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. That's my next big event, so you can come over and see Bigfoot, okay?
Absolutely. I'd love to see Bigfoot. I actually want to shake that man's hand because he scared more people than I can.
Well, I saw one today. I did.
Well,
did
I'm you? A non-believer in that one, so if you can make me believe, I promise I'll preach around the world that Bigfoot's real because I still haven't seen my first alien yet.
Oh, man. I, Jeremiah, I think you and Dave are going to get along just fine.
Every time John seen a Bigfoot, I'm thinking that he had a date that night. You know what I mean? It's doesn't count the girl you took out to Applebee's. That is not a Bigfoot.
That's not a sighting of Bigfoot.
That's right. Just because you pick up a waitress at Chili's does not mean you had a Bigfoot sighting.
Yeah.
That is
Goody
so
goo.
That is so
yeah.
Bad.
Goo goo.
Yeah.
Come on up to Lake Pontchartrain. All right. I'll stop trying to be a comedian until the next breath I draw. Please continue, Jeremiah.
Can I interject something?
No.
Please.
I wanted to just give a plug to we've been around 20 years, blah, blah, blah. You've heard that. But we have 20 movies under our belt, short movies. We're in just 2.5 weeks, we're about to do our 21st short. And it's a thriller dealing with a radio station call-in program. And this guy who can't sleep calls into this late night program and they have a conversation and it one thing leads to another and it's kind of a thriller situation. Well done, well written. The guys down in New Bern, the crew down in New Bern are going to pull that off. And I just think that no matter what state you're in, because of what we were talking about earlier with how technology has changed, because of technology, almost anybody can make a movie nowadays. If you study the fundamentals, and hell, there are people who make movies with just the iPhone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's
truth.
If you have a good story, and filmmakers are storytellers, animators are storytellers. You guys, when you're selling, are storytellers. You paint a picture, and people either buy it or they don't. And that's – it is incredibly cool. I am not a storyteller. I'm just kind of a nuts and bolts guy, kind of keep the cart rolling. But it has been amazingly cool to be around all these folks that are so talented, like all you guys. You guys are – you wouldn't be where you're at without all the talent you have. I just wanted to say that to you guys. I don't know if anybody ever talks to you about that, but you're a very, very talented group of people.
And I appreciate that. If you could let me bring my wife out here and you could repeat that, I would greatly appreciate it.
I was going to go with the checks in the mail, Anthony.
Okay, thank you,
I'll start that.
I hope I put the appropriate amount of sincerity into it.
No, that was excellent. And, you know, I agree with you because the first Comic-Con I did, I was kind of I felt like I was kind of out of my tree when I went to my first Comic-Con and was, you know, I had just started selling my books. I had probably been in the publishing deal, self-publishing at the time, for maybe like 2 months. And oddly enough, I was a big Walking Dead fan. And there was a gentleman by the name of Dango Quinn. Who was across from me, and all I'm doing is just standing there going, holy crap, I'm 8 feet away from a Walking Dead cast member. You know, Jesus, what do I do, you know? And throughout the day and everything, you know, I'm telling folks about my book and blah, blah, blah. And he came over and started talking to me. And, you know, I didn't know what to say. You know, I was actually just kind of like, why is this guy talking to me, you know? And by the end of the day, he says, look, he says, I'm an actor. He says, everything starts with a story. If you're drawing a comic book, there has to be a story behind it. If you're making a TV show, there has to be a story behind it. If you're writing a book, there has to be a story behind it. He says it all starts at the story. He says, and you guys who write don't get enough credit. So, yeah, I want to buddy up with you. And God rest his soul. I miss him a lot because he was one of those guys that would shoot me a message when I'm, you know, in a lull on the work and go, hey, how's it going? What you doing? You got anything new? And I almost felt obliged to do something. You know, it was something that was a motivating thing. And I never realized it, but yeah, everything you watch, everything you read, everything, even songs for crying out loud. Now, granted, a lot of the music now, there ain't a whole hell of a lot to it, but, you know, you take songs from earlier before, and there's a story behind it. And, you know, it all has to go somewhere. So, yeah, it definitely, I couldn't agree with you more. The stories are where it's at, and it doesn't have to be an epic. It could be something short, you know, it could be just a little bit of anything. And, you know, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, sir.
Thank you. I'm just telling the truth as I see it. And that includes Jeremiah. I mean, you don't create, you know, comics, and you don't get into that field if you don't yearn to tell a story.
Right. Absolutely.
Jeremiah, have you ever written a story, a short?
No, I like to write books, actually. I love to write.
That shut me up.
What kind of books do you write, Jeremiah?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're getting better about it.
Right now I'm in the middle of writing a book called Hunt, but I have written a bunch of stuff. I'm pretty sure all of you have heard of Creepypasta.
Yeah.
I've written a lot of stories on there. A bunch of different pen names. I would never be able to tell you them exactly because I lose emails and passwords like pieces of paper out of my back pocket. But, yeah, I like to write a lot. I also keep a small journal around me everywhere I go. It's always sitting in my back pocket. It's actually sitting in my back pocket right now. Always thinking of new things, and I like to always like to dream of a different world than what we see today, whether it be unfortunately post-apocalyptic, which is what seems everybody's gathering around nowadays, or to an alien planet, or even just using humans themselves and seeing what I can get them into, really.
Cool. Why do you think post-apocalyptic is so big now?
Just because of what we know today as humans. Like, we're always advancing in research. You know, we have the Terminator, which has been done for a very long time. The aliens, which was a huge fear back from the 70s up until today. And you even see it, like you said, The Walking Dead. I mean, there's now a comic book and two different shows off of just one comic itself. Let's see what else we got. The Resident Evil series, that's all post-apocalyptic. I mean, the human subspecies is not done, but we're on the very brink. And it seems like it's been done over and over and over again. I would just like to see it done in a new light, which is what I'm trying to do myself.
I'm going to throw something out on that post-apocalyptic stuff. You know, that's we've had the end of the world is coming stuff going on, predictions, you know, Nostradamus on down the line forever, Book of Revelations, you name it. So it's always been there. It is absolutely nothing new. But you stop and you think with the advent of the Cold War and the threat of nuclear holocaust looming over us for so long, that, you know, that was really huge. And it's just, and it's never gone away, because while we may not have necessarily that two superpowers facing one another issue going on anymore, it's, if anything, it's more widespread. And so the
it's used a lot because it's a constant fear.
That, it's open season on that. There's nothing, when you write about anything that's post-apocalyptic, you're not wrong. If you were to write a book about, say, Abraham Lincoln, you'd have to do fact-checking and all that kind of good stuff. But when it comes down to post-apocalyptic stuff, nobody is wrong. I mean, if you look at the Mad Max stuff, you know, you're going, oh, well, you know, if everything blew up, how in the hell did they have cars out there? Well, hey, how do they not have cars out there? So it's such an open field, and what it does, it releases the creativity. It doesn't handcuff the writer and lets the imagination flow. That's the thing I like about it. It just and you go all directions. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You know, you've got, you know, zombie apocalypse. You've got, you know, the Mad Max thing, the post-nuclear stuff. You know, they've had stuff that's even been post-plague and all that kind of jazz. I mean, it's all over the place. It's if I was going to write a post-apocalyptic novel, though, I would definitely write about it. And it wouldn't be disease or nukes that rubbed us all out. It would be romaine lettuce, because they've had recalls of romaine lettuce. Romaine lettuce, the recalls, they do it like 3 or 4 times a year. So we could put robots on Mars, but by God, lettuce is going to wipe out the human race. So that's where I'm going to go with.
Butterflies, man.
All I'm saying, when it comes to the romaine lettuce, Montezuma's revenge is moving north.
Yes.
Really? I've seen butterflies, man. Butterflies look innocent. Next thing you know, they got their antennas in your neck, and now they're killing you. They're taking each other.
No way.
Yeah,
no way.
See? Butterflies, man.
Butterflies.
Quick swipe. People would start fearing butterflies more than they feared zombies. Be hearing it all across the world. Butterfly.
Oh, dude. Bring it. Just bring it.
That works. Yes.
Oh, man. You know how many people with their chicks with their butterfly tattoos are going to freak out? Oh, man. That would be awesome. What if all the tattoos became animated and did it?
Now you got to explain that. Why are the tattoos moving now? I mean, you can't.
Or,
you got to be creative. You got to be quick with that. Why you use real butterflies? Real. Just they stick their antennas in the back of your neck. Game over. Now you're like a robot walking around.
And well, you know, because humans are the way they are. They fear things, so they could jump to the conclusion that people with the butterfly tattoo on them somehow help this to happen, and so everybody, they kill them all.
Oh,
they like make all
killed.
The people with the butterfly tattoo a cult.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
You know what? We can put together an epic for somebody that's listening, and they're going to steal our stuff.
It's hard as hell.
Oh, I got an even better one. What about if instead of like the usual cocoon thing and all that, when they stick their antennas in you and they do all that, it does the whole bot fly thing.
That's disgusting. I don't even want to talk about that anymore. That's a true terror of mine. Dude, like, that is just gross. Ew.
But we're all laughing about it. But 50 years ago, there was some guy sitting in his room with a doobie rolled up, and he's going, man, you know what? What would happen if we, like, went in the future, came out, hang on, I got to take another drag, and, like, man, apes ruled everything, man. And some guy who was sober was sitting on the other side of the living room writing this stuff down. Next thing you know, hey, Chuck, got this idea for this movie. Next thing you know, Charlton Heston's, you know, get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape. I mean, Planet of the Apes was genius. You watch that movie, now a lot of the subsequent stuff isn't, but you watch the original Planet of the Apes, dude, I don't care how many times you watch it, you sit on the edge of your seat. I mean, and then, you know, they go, he rides off with Nova, and might I say, I would have never rode off with Nova. I probably would have made it 50, 60 yards, and I'd have been off that horse in the sand. I'd have started up humanity all over again. I'd have gotten it, you know, I'd have gotten to work quick. I wouldn't have, you know, he's riding a horse for miles. I'm like, dude, you're all alone on the beach with Nova on the back of the horse. Stop the horse. Okay, come on, Jack. But
yeah, I think that was inferred, Dave. That's the way they did it back then. They inferred things, you know. It was a hint, you know.
Leave it to me to have a mind in the gutter, right? But when he sees and spoiler alert, when he sees the Statue of Liberty, I mean, every time you see that last 30 seconds of that movie, you're like, damn, that was an idea that somebody thought up of sitting around, and whether they had narcotics or alcohol or just a good creative mind, you know, damn. And I'm thankful that whoever the one who came up with it wrote it had the bravery to do it, because it's good watching, you know.
That's how I feel about the Rob Zombie
old girl.
I have a lot of respect for his work.
You know, Jeremiah, at Dragon Con down in Atlanta, I had the privilege of several times of meeting and working, or not working with, but meeting and, I guess, socializing with the guy who did Rob Zombie's movies.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, no. And One of my friends came up to me. Yeah, one of my friends came up to me after, and he said, "Do you know who you were just talking to?" It's a tall guy, scruffy looking, right, dude? And I was like, no. He said, "You know that movie that we saw last night?" And I went, "Yeah." Does he look similar? I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, no, I didn't even know who I was talking
to. A lot of his work.
Those are people that can think outside the box, right?
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, you look at a lot of stuff. Look at Peter Benchley, wrote Jaws, okay?
Yeah.
I can honestly tell you, if it wasn't for that movie, I would probably be a gold medal swimmer. But after watching Jaws, I didn't want to take a damn shower. You know what I mean? And, you know, again, it's another one of those things where he sat down in front of a typewriter. What was it? Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist.
Yeah.
You know, and don't get me wrong, and it's the thing about creative minds that a lot of times that bothers me. And sometimes you got to watch what you say, even in jest to friends and everything who are creative, is you got to be careful on how many ideas you piss on. And, you know, I'm sure Peter eventually went through moments where he's like, "Hey, so what, Pete, what you up to, man?" "Yeah, I'm writing this book about this 30-foot shark that's going to terrorize Amity, Massachusetts." And they're going, "All right, Pete. Well, you keep right on, buddy. Take care.
You keep doing that. Yeah,
and they're all back there snickering at Pete. The women won't talk to him. Blah blah blah. And what does he do? He comes out with, you know, such a impactful book. And then of course Spielberg carried it even further with the movies and whatnot. So, yeah, when it comes down to creativity, though, a lot of times we say things in jest. Get down and like you were saying earlier, write the stuff down. Never let a thought. You've got all of about 2 minutes to write down a good thought, and then it starts to fade away on you. Never let an odd thought go away, because you never can tell when that one odd thought is going to meet another odd thought you had 4 months later, and you're having that chocolate and peanut butter moment, and before you know it, you're writing the next Planet of the Apes. You're writing the next Jaws. You're writing the next Exorcist.
Well, you know, you're something, and, man, what a great time to bring this up with given who we have as our guests here with Anthony and Jeremiah. You've got the people that will write something. They'll come together in that. But to translate that book to vision and make it good.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll argue about how much is be true to the original story and all that kind of thing. That's a whole different thing. But, you know, you can take a book and twist it, or you can take it and stay true and do it. But if it's not done right, it's going to be a crap movie, and it'll never be what it could have been.
Right.
You know, now that you bring that up, I have a lot of problems with when it comes down to books being translated into movies. A lot of movie people in the business will run out of money, but not fully like touch on every base in a book. It what you do say is extremely true, but it would also be extremely hard to hit on every almost exact aspect in a book that would make the book and the movie
similar or portray each other closely.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh yeah, like Lord of the Rings skipped Count Bombadil huge.
Twilight series.
Was it necessarily missed in the movie? Not really. But
well, also
the book
fact
that
of Gimli. Gimli was not a funny character. Gimli was actually an extremely serious character throughout all the Lord of the Rings books.
Right.
Yeah. The there's a, oh yeah, they definitely added personality and stuff to that. So there's all those freedoms, but that's all about that translation and taking that vision and making it. Those were good flicks. You know, they did a pretty good job. That kind of thing. The
Jeremiah's from.
Go ahead.
Jeremiah's from Massachusetts. Does Jaws still have an impact up there? Is that still a tourist?
Oh yes, no. Jaws has a very impact, a very big impact up there. Also, along with the Amityville horror movies and Pet Cemetery. The Lizzie Borden house, a lot of the movies that have been touched upon in a horror way are very big up there. Even with movies that have been done even in Boston City, there are spots where paintings or art has been done in that area of with a representation of what has been done in that area. It's actually very cool. Massachusetts is very well cultured.
Well, it's been around.
Yeah, there's
a
good point about the movie
Boondocks. Have any weight up there?
Say that again.
Does Boondocks have any weight up there?
You're talking about the movie?
Yeah.
A lot of people know it. But not really. I mean, Jaws is the one that really hit big for Massachusetts.
What about all the Matt Damon movies that happened up there?
Man, there was a ton. That's, I'm glad you went there.
I wouldn't know too much. I've actually been down in North Carolina for almost 2 years now, so I've kind of, other than my friends, I kind of lost touch with what goes on up there.
The whole reason I brought up movies and locations is tourism. That's one of the things that a movie industry, you would not think it, but that's one of the things the movie industry can do is bring in tourism.
Yes.
Somebody's mic is really loud.
I think it's a guy's vehicle.
Yeah.
The guy's driving.
Yeah, you got a window down?
No, sir.
There we go.
For the sake of the show, we need you to suffocate, okay? You don't mind choking out, dude.
Hey, look. There's nothing you can't do for your art. But yeah, the whole tourism thing, yes, sir, because that hits on many levels, what you're talking about, Anthony, because if you're doing a whether it's a pop culture, oh, this is cool because it was just in, let's say, a fictional movie, but it was set in such and such place. But if it was a movie that brought a piece of history out and talked about a landmark type thing or whatever, a lot of that is huge.
Yeah, a lot of places. We were just in Southport, North Carolina. Me and my wife was down there doing some shell shooting on the shore down there. And incidentally, I didn't realize just how much historical stuff Southport, North Carolina had. Nevertheless, I could take you all night long with that. But they had a spot where they had shot one of the many Nicholas Spark films down there. And me and my wife walked back and forth trying to find it, and come to find out it was just a spot of property. But all over their tourism stuff and on all their maps, they're saying Nicholas Spark so-and-so. I can't remember the name of the film. He, you know, had more than what is needed, but it says it was filmed here. Hey, they got us to walk around for 45 minutes looking for the place. And so you're absolutely right when it comes down to the – and plus, you know, for the film, when you're at, when you're able to go back and step into places that you see – as a matter of fact, that night we were over there watching for Stroh's thing with that Goldberg movie he was in. There were, they filmed part of it in Burgall, North Carolina, and I used to manage a grocery store in Burgall, North Carolina in the 90s, and there was a restaurant called Alley Cat's in downtown Burgall, and I had no idea they were filming in Burgall, and I'm watching the film, and they have a sequence where they're eating in a restaurant, and I says, hey, that's Alley Cat's. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wow, you know, I'd be to the same place. So, yeah, I mean, I could see where it would definitely increase your foot traffic to your movie box, you know.
One
well,
of
I
the,
can tell you. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if you guys remember the movie Last of the Mohicans,
Yep.
This is something the tourism office in North Carolina and Raleigh talk about. They featured a section of the state. It's Chimney Rock near Lake Lure up in the mountains. And it has this very iconic looking landscape. And people would see that landscape and for whatever reason decided they wanted to retire there. So they would wait, they would research, they would look at the end of the movie, figure out where it was, contact the tourism, and go to Western North Carolina just to live there because that movie was shot there. That's impactful. So not when your story
yeah,
and I'll get off my soapbox here in a moment, but when you creative folks create these stories. And then those stories can be brought to life either through a book or a movie or anime or, you know, cartoon, whatever. You impact people. That your messages you send out, the morals that you've painted, you have impacted. You've sent out ripples that you will have no clue. The creators of that movie had no clue that it would drive tourism, people to relocate to Western North Carolina. Furthest thing from that,
which Anthony, I find really that, cool.
I've got an interesting story to tell everybody because it's one that I come across all the time in my particular travels. There is a novel written by a gentleman. He won Pulitzer Prize for this novel. They made the movie in a particular location in Georgia. Had two of the biggest stars in history in the movie. It was nominated for, 9 or 10 Academy Awards. I think it won one.
Okay, I know where you're going.
One, and the entire county revolted against Warner Brothers Studios when they wanted to hold a 30th anniversary celebration with John Voight and Burt Reynolds and Ronnie Cox. For the movie Deliverance, which is the most universally hated single topic in all of Raven County. Unbelievable. And, you know, so it's interesting. I mean, I agree with you. Movies can elevate and enlighten. But, you know, there's two sides to this coin. And, I mean, I'm in Clayton, Georgia at least once a month. And just the scuttle is still... They're still not happy with Deliverance, although it's the single most famous thing that ever happened to that county, other than the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. Go ahead, Anthony.
Well, the only thing that I wanted to mention is its image. Of course, because it paints the county as backward fucks, right? Sorry, but it is if you're.
Yeah.
That's the power that cinema can do. It can paint an entire county as backward for half a century. And they're fighting that
more.
Image or more. They're fighting that image to this day. That's power. Gone with the Wind, the book Gone with the Wind. The book Roots. Look what it does. That's power. The whole reason Lincoln did what he did with the Emancipation Proclamation is because he read Harriet Beecher Stowe's book on slavery, her tales in slavery. It so moved him, he actually met her.
Considered one of the greatest books in all of American literature history. One of the greatest books in American literature history.
No,
for sure.
Most definitely.
And I butchered the title, but that's okay. and it's my point is, title butchered and all, that it is what you folks do, what you creative folks do, can have immense power. And I just think that's so incredible. It's like it's just impressive. It's really impressive.
That's why it's so important for anybody trying to translate a book or a comic or whatever to screen. I feel that there's a certain amount of responsibility that those people have to keep it true. And, I don't know how many times, Stephen King, he's a prime, probably the best example of how you could read his book and then you watch the movie and you're going, damn, did anybody read this book? And to be honest with you, as a guy who's written a couple books, that is my biggest fear with ever selling the rights to my books for movies or television, is that it's going to be contorted and somebody watches the film or the movie or the TV show and goes, God, this sucks. So the next day they're in Barnes & Noble and they see my book and they're going, hey, that was that ridiculous show we saw last night. And my book doesn't sell. And
Do you see scenes as you write your book? Do you see your characters moving and talking and walking as if you were there yourself as you write your book? Because that's what I see scenes.
Yep.
I see scenes. Every single paragraph, every single chapter I write, if I'm not seeing the correct scene, I rewrite it all. Like, I don't care if I have to delete a whole 10 chapters to just redo what I just did. If the scenes aren't adding up, I do not write it no more.
You are absolutely correct. When I first started, the first book, the first 5 chapters that I wrote, when I read them back to myself, it sounded like I was calling a hockey game. And it was, and it's because I was looking down on it. So I took a character and I turned him into me. And when I put that character in there, and that character, he's got the bad sense of humor. He's the guy that, he's me. If you know me and you read the books, you're going, yeah, that's that Will. But
yeah, Dave,
what
you're
it
being
did.
Far too kind to yourself, okay?
Yeah, possibly so. Well, of course, if you read the book, you'd understand. But, it gave me a ground level view on what was going on. So I was no longer talking and writing as if I was looking down on it. I was talking and writing as if I was right in the middle of it. And how I feel, as a matter of fact, in another branch, I don't know if you participate in said activities, but I do some of my best work when I'm inebriated. And, my brother who does my editing and everything, he'll edit a chapter that I've written, and he'll shoot me an email back. Here's the chapter edited. I changed this. I changed that. I corrected this. Blah blah blah. He says, you probably don't even remember writing this chapter, do you? And I'll respond back, no, to be honest with you, I don't. And he'll come back. He says, yeah, because it's brilliant. But when I go back and read it, I get all choked up reading it. Because I'm going, damn, that's me. That if I was in this situation, this is how I would be handling things. And, you know, the character that I modeled myself after, he lost his entire family to, and he was a guy who was an outlaw. He was a hellraiser. He met a woman. She said, I'll never have anything to do with you with the way you're living. And he shut it down. He stopped all of his clown business and became a good man for the love of a woman. And he only had kids, and he became a pastor and the whole nine yards. And within a blink of an eye, his entire family was wiped out. And now he's battling this whole instinctually, he wants to go back to doing what he was doing, but he doesn't want to disappoint his wife and children that are in heaven watching him. And that's me, because before I met my wife, I was a disaster. And now since these came along, I'm less of a disaster. But nevertheless, I'm reading this book. And the emotion that I was writing with, and of course, like I said, I was liquored up, so the emotions were running. And, you know, it was just one of those things where by putting myself into it, it just changed the whole scope of my writing. And when I read my books over and over and over, like I always do, there's a lot of times my first book, it's all I could do to read my first book because I could see how rookie it was. But then my second book, there's such a groove to it. And so by putting yourself into it, like you said, you know, getting yourself immersed in it, just don't call the game. Get in there and get in it. And be part of it. Don't be scared to participate.
Yeah.
How many books have you
been writing now? Oh, my apologies. Was that
how many books have you written, sir?
Well, I've got three published. I've got the fourth one done. I'm halfway through the fifth. And then, of course, I've done some screenplay type stuff that I haven't shared with anybody that I've got sitting on my laptop, but published out there to buy is three.
Thank you very much for that, by the way.
All right, guys. I apologize, but I'm going to throw in a tangent. I did get a message from Liz. She passes her love. She's doing family stuff with her niece, so she's not even going to try our third world modern day communication stuff. But I did want to pass that. Now, on the translation of a book to a movie, let me run an analogy. You got people that, let's talk about cover songs, right? So somebody's had a song they like, they're musicians and stuff like that. And you've got a variety of cover songs that come out. You've got where they try to do it almost note for note, completely match the style, the whole nine yards, not miss a thing. They exactly try to clone it. Think about doing a movie the same way. Then they got the ones where they tweak it with a bit of their style. And then you got the ones where they are so completely different from the original, but they do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and just for the record, all three can be successful.
Can I give you an example of that?
Yeah, sure, please.
One of the songs that I think represents this really well. This somebody has their window down again. There we go. Well,
it's not me.
Oh, but it stopped right after you said it.
Yeah. So you guys remember the team Simon and Garfunkel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. And you remember the song they came out with, The Sound of Silence?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. And then, yes.
You know where I'm going. You know where I'm going. Now,
I know
this guy, this guy from a band called Disturbed redid it in his own way, right? In the way he read the words, in the way the words evoked emotion to him. And it almost
broke. A lot of the Google Dolls music had that happen to them.
And it almost broke the internet. It was stunning. It was the water cooler talk the next day when he performed it on Conan. It is, and I've watched it. It really is. If you watch the Simon and Garfunkel one, and then his is so different and deep. And that's I think what you're talking about, right?
Oh yeah, I dug it, but I did find a groove. Actually, you know what I had in my head, and if you want to go that way, and we'll go a tad deeper than Simon and Garfunkel, is the Cure's take on Purple Haze.
Okay.
If you haven't heard that, Anthony, it is pure, but it's like freaking good. And I am not a Cure guy. I am seriously not a Cure guy. But when I heard it, I was like, oh, man, that's good. But, yes, I get exactly what you take. And sometimes somebody can have a take on thing and you'd be like, man, that's good. And here's the thing, too, to touch on that. Two different critics, same song, we're not going to necessarily have the same answer. It's much like you take 10 people, have them do a written description of the Mona Lisa, and you let different people read all 10 descriptions. Do you know they're even looking at the same picture?
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
It's
like watching a war movie. You watch a war movie with my dad. I've always said that if you ever watch a war film, and my dad, of course, you know, retired sergeant major, 30 years, he's seen a lot. And I learn more about my dad every day because he doesn't brag about his accomplishments, and which makes me even more proud to be his son. But I've often thought about turning on a war film and facing my dad and having my back to the film and watching my dad, because when we watch Hamburger Hill together, he was getting up, getting him a drink. He was going to the bathroom. He was sitting down. He was wiggling in his chair the whole nine yards. But when we watch Private Ryan together, he doesn't flinch. He doesn't move an inch. And to me, you know, for all the bullets that whiz by his head, that just tells me that that film was done correctly. And you're right when it comes down to the critics. You know, there's going to be people who think, hey, you know, God, this is great. And it may be two different types of people. I mean, look at Whitney Houston and Dolly Parton with the Bodyguard song. Jesus, it just left me. I'll always love you. Dolly Parton, when she sang that song, she just totally wiped out the country industry. I mean, that song was played over and over and over. I remember my mother crying to that Dolly Parton song. And 25 years later, Whitney Houston comes out with it, puts a different spin on it, but it was a different audience and it was a different time. And
yeah,
she didn't bastardize the song at all, but she made it fit the time period in her style. And both of them, I thought, were brilliant.
Yeah.
She did it in her own way, which made it her own.
Oh, it's like David Lee Roth will never freaking be Linda Ronstadt by any means.
Oh, yeah.
In my mind, she's one of the greatest greatest vocalists ever. But Van Halen's take on No Good was pretty fucking solid.
Great. It is. That is a great tune. But I could turn around and listen to Linda Ronstadt's just the same. You know, it's
exactly.
And again, you know,
you can get it right different.
But without bastardizing,
right,
without pulling apart, yeah, without totally screwing the whole art of it up, you know.
Oh, most definitely. All right, guys. Look, since I threw in the tangent, and I'm rocking and rolling here on tangents, and I've got storytellers amongst us. You guys can decide if the story is true or false. All right.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Ready, Eddie.
Family tradition, since my son was roughly 4 years old, old enough to be able to execute the task, New Year's Eve has been hanging around, playing Uno as a family. We're hunkered down. We're safe. And, you know, we do some food up, that kind of thing, you know, generally hot wings, whatnot. As the Hawaiians would call it, we would do poo-poos. He is now a grown man. He's a machine gunner by trade for the United States Marine Corps. He teaches at the School of Infantry on the East Coast. He's married. Has his own family, buying the house, that kind of thing. They got the place. So he's hosting a get-together for New Year's Eve. Now, it just so happens that his dad lives in the geographic bachelor style, away from his family and his household, his dad being me. I'm up here in Indy. My family's still in North Carolina. So Mama flew out for that week. So my son calls on New Year's Eve. Keep in mind a family tradition, that kind of thing, his status. And just for the record, a reminder, it's not like he just met me. He's known me his whole life. The just to be clear here, he calls, he's got an issue with something, he's trying to, you know, he's working on putting together some fondue, and the damn propane stove wasn't playing for him. We walked through, we did some troubleshooting, boom, he's back in business. So when he calls us, he called using a video chat. So he is effectively on speakerphone. And again, he has company in his house. So he did not, in closing, after we resolved this issue, he did not ask or he did not say, hey, thanks for helping me. You guys have a great New Year's. I'm taking care of my guests type thing. Despite knowing me for all his life, nearly 28 years for him, he said, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, what are you guys doing for New Year's Eve? And y'all have probably figured out that I'm fairly unfiltered. So my immediate answer was, oh, we're playing Strip Uno. So because it was a video call and he's on speakerphone, first thing I saw was his face where he started to throw up in his mouth. And then the look across his face that said, oh shit, I'm on speakerphone and I have company.
Yeah.
Okay.
Strip.
And I'll tell you what, they may say this generation of the Marine Corps is not as good as the last generation, but I will tell you this. He did not, and absolutely he did not, curl up in the floor into a ball and start sucking his thumb. He actually stood there and took it like a man. So there is something to be said for him. So y'all tell me, is that fact or fiction?
Fact. This is Dr. John, and that has to be a fact.
I'll go with Dr. John.
Fact.
And just for the record, that's not the worst thing I ever did as a dad. You know, I told my kids as they were growing up that every time the ice cream truck came down the road when it was playing music, it meant it was out of stock.
Oh, my God. Oh, really, God.
That is so wrong. Then they were out of ice cream.
That's horrible, dude. That's the worst thing I've ever heard. That's like something from North Korea.
North Korea.
That's a North Korean answer. Come on. Did you really do that, though?
Well, it could be worse. The parents of Salvador Dali, when Salvador Dali was growing up, they told him until he was like 8 or 9, they told him that he was going to grow up to be a god.
Really?
And he did. And
yeah.
He did. And they were right, and he did.
And they were right. You have to
That's
be careful.
Right.
Wow.
Well, I've got a Salvador Dali story for you. It's the best Salvador style. Being from Winston-Salem, I have friends that are Reynolds, as in RJ Reynolds Tobacco Company, and I was invited to just a modest little cocktail party, modest little house in a modest little neighborhood of Winston-Salem. And I'm walking to the bathroom, and I look on the left, and there is a reproduction of Salvador Dali's The Ascent of Man. And then I was going to just touch it because it obviously had to be a reproduction until I saw the wires and I saw the burglar alarm. And my buddy Reynolds Lassiter comes walking in. I said, "That's a burglar alarm, correct?" And he laughed. He said, "This way for someone to tell me to realize that that is the original." He said, "No one's ever put it that way." I said, "Well, I didn't want to act like a total fool. If it was a burglar alarm, that's the original. And if you've ever seen it when they let it go out into the touring world, Salvador Dali was a god, period. If you've ever seen the original, it's not that big. It's only like 20 inches by like 16. It's not very big for all that massive godlike painting architecture to be in it. All right, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Is that a burglar alarm?
Same thing I told my wife when I met her. It's not all that big.
Yeah, huh? Size matters.
Are you talking about Rembrandt's Night Watch now? Come on.
In other words, if it's huge and it has
some art here.
Good.
Sorry.
Talking about art. Man.
We are talking about The Ascent of Man by Dali. Yeah. Okay.
You know, going on this whole tangent that Todd introduced about doing covers and doing remakes of stuff. Jeremiah, if you had some anime, now granted, the anime thing's kind of interesting when it comes down to it because, I'll be 50 in May. So the anime that I was introduced to was your Vampire Hunters D and that kind of stuff. And I was never into the Dragon Ball, never got into the Naruto stuff. I think because it was my when it was coming out, I was in my 40s, when it was kind of, it just didn't connect with where I was in life. Nevertheless, my son lives and dies by a lot of the stuff. He was in there watching stuff when I went in and got another malt beverage earlier. And for me, I try to watch some of the stuff that's on Netflix now, the original stuff, or the stuff they're making now, better yet. And sometimes it's just as good, and then sometimes you're like, God, did anybody put any thought into this? So I don't know how many times I've rolled around in my head, gosh, they ought to try to do something like Vampire Hunter D, you know? But then I thought to myself, gosh, if they did that, could they pull it off? So, I mean, is there any type of particular anime that you would like to be, like to see reintroduced with more of a modern spin to connect with what's going on these days, you know, that you've endeared yourself to over the years?
A lot of my favorite animes, that really kept me going and made me pursue more anime was Naruto. Like I said, I am one that I have to have a personal connection with the characters where I feel as though I can relate in one way or another. Naruto being picked on as heavily as he did, I was picked on really bad as a kid growing up and becoming an adult because of my social disabilities that I have. So not really, but one show that I would really love to be revisited is The X-Files, something that I watched with my mom and dad as a young kid.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
X-Files.
Cool. Dude, do that in anime. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's some stuff out there.
The X-Files should be revisited. The X-Files was a great show. And the two main characters did an amazing job. But I feel as though there's a lot of stuff they still did not touch on in those shows, which I feel as though they could go back and just... Like, the X-Files could go on forever, because even to this day, there's stuff like, we don't even, like, we're like, oh, where did this come up from the internet, and why is this happening? But, like, if the X-Files was still around, we could just, like, you know, have a bunch of screenwriters come up with some really good ideas that seem super realistic, and then go send those characters out on an adventure.
Yeah, no, and with the animation... Characters don't age. Characters don't have contract disputes. You could go on forever and continue the story on. So yeah, that one would be. That's like, gosh, it was totally the title. Attack on Titan. Out of the
oh yeah. Book.
My son says, "Man, Dad, you gotta watch this." And, of course, me, I'm going, look, man, you know, all right, when I get a chance, I'll start watching it. Well, I actually sat down one evening, and he was watching it, and he was halfway through the first season, and I started watching it kind of haphazardly, and before you know it, I'm rewatching the entire series. So what they can do with stuff now just with the technology and the storytelling ability and all that. And to be honest with you, there's a lot more now. There's a lot more Anthony Dowlings in the world now than what there was when I was in my 20s. You know, when I was in my 20s, and, you know, that's why I look at guys like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and those guys, and I wonder how much hell those guys caught over the years where they're going, hey, I got a great idea. This guy, you know, he climbs walls and he shoots webs out of his wrist. And everybody's like, shut up, Stan. You know, because that's when you were drawing that kind of stuff in the 70s and 80s, there were times that, you know, I would draw stuff and I'd end up in the counselor's office. It wasn't because I had a bunch of blood and my parents being killed or something like that, but it was like, you know, he needs to be drawing rainbows and houses with trees beside it, and he's drawing this guy that's, you know, part bear, part human. There's something wrong with this kid. Whereas now, there's a lot more embracing to a creative side of things, and, you know, you watch that Attack on Titan, and it's genuinely creepy as hell when you watch it. And it's an amazing concept. And, you know, so, yeah, if you were to take the X-Files and go in an anime side of that, oh, God, there is no telling what they can do with something like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, despite just anime itself, like Final Fantasy 3D animation, like, that's amazing. Like, if you guys have ever seen the Advent Children movies, like, that's, like, seeing characters float in the air at the same time as fight, I mean, that blows my mind sometimes till this day, or, I don't know, work's got me burnt out right now, let's see, what else? There's a lot out there, man. As old as you guys are well beyond me, man. I can't even keep up with you guys. You guys all got me tired. I'm feeling old now. You guys got me feeling old. I hope you're all pat yourselves on the back. 24 years old and I feel old now.
Good for you, man. Old age, good stuff. I use it as an excuse all the time.
It's awesome. There is so much that we touched on earlier that we have not got back to, and I hate to say this, but we're like at 21, 22 minutes after 10. So we are pushing the end of the show. So there was something, Jeremiah, that Anthony asked you earlier, and I'm going to ask you to try to be succinct, please. He asked you, what is one of the hidden animation tricks in movies that most of us don't know about? That was one of Anthony's first questions to you on the show. So I'm trying to bring us back full circle.
Okay. One of the basic tricks, I would say, would
remember
be sniping. Sniping tool is very well used in animation. It allows you to capture small things you have done and allows you to put it together quickly.
Is there an example?
I don't know one right off the top of my head. My apologies. Not for sniping. The graphics. I would say being able to take a moving graphic art with a sniping tool and placing it behind an image that you've already had beforehand on the green screen.
Okay. That software that does that?
Yes, that is software that does that.
I know there's a big controversy.
I have not made a lot of animations myself. My apologies for not being able to answer that very well. I work by myself a lot. When I make my stuff, I usually just draw and make 3D animated characters. I have not put together my very first animation just yet. I am very amateur in the animating business.
Dude, I'm going to throw this out. I know that animation is used for crowds. Just little things. Absolutely. They can take a group of 100 extras and they can fill a stadium.
That's right. I mean, they've had those programs for a while. When I was teaching in computer science, we got a hold of one. And yes, you can take three people and clone them and make sections of that group do different things. It's just amazing what you can do. I just can't remember the name of the software, but it was amazing. I mean, you could create the whole cast.
25, 26 after.
All righty.
One of the things that Jeremiah told me about, which I thought was interesting, is some of the movies that use parchment and written word on parchment paper, they don't actually do that. They don't waste the parchment. They actually animate that in.
Oh, yeah, they did that on the show Tudors. If you ever watch the BBC, a lot of graphic designers will use stuff like as a the pictures you see in a church. They make that, they will paint that and turn art from that piece of glass that they had used and used it as in the church, or use parchment paper and make it pretty for the character to draw or sign their name on. A lot of graphic designers also do calligraphy.
Wow,
nice.
That's cool. But you know what? Sure. I guess someone was right. We have about run out of time. As we've learned from some of our good friends, let's let everybody take 15 seconds and say goodbye to all, and then we will walk into the sunset waiting for another Pop Culture Star. So I'm going to give everybody 15 to 20 seconds. That's about what we got. So I'm going to start first with Anthony Dowling. What have you got to say to everybody?
Thank you very much for having me. It has been a ball to talk to everybody, and I certainly hope everybody stays creative.
All right, we'll stay creative. Jeremiah, what you got to say to everybody?
I want to say thank you for meeting you, Wallet. It was absolutely a pleasure, and I would like everybody to constantly keep looking into the future.
Look into the future. That's it. They did a movie about that. Absolutely. They went back there. All right, Dave Atwell.
Big thanks to Mr. Dowling. It's always great to have you aboard. Jeremiah, you keep up the good work, young man. I mean, the future's just, things are just starting for you. So God knows what 25 years from now you'll be saying on a different kind of broadcast. But to Mr. Dowling, every time you come on here, sir, I feel inspired. And I'm not just saying that. To pump the ass full of sunshine. The thing I dig about you is that you're one of those guys that stimulates creativity and endorses the creativity. And regardless of whether it's up, down, or in between, you always put a positive spin on it. You always make people feel like, hey, I can do this. So amen. And I wish there was a whole hell of a lot more people like you out there. So God bless you. I appreciate you being back on.
All right,
thank
Anthony, that's a $15,000 donation to Pop Culture Stars. Todd Saxon, what have you got?
Dave does not understand 15 seconds is my first part. But Anthony Dowling, Jeremiah, guys, you are the absolute best. It has been beyond a pleasure to have you. Thank you very much. This has been a blast.
Well done.
Awesome. And I will close with the following. I have finally learned self-control. I've been studying stand-up comedy by watching the two greatest, which are Rodney Dangerfield and Paul Lynde of the Hollywood Squares. Through my mind the entire time, I have had 1,000 one-liners, and I haven't said but one. So I want to say thanks for helping me learn self-control, because Dave and Todd are just such dirty rats to me when I get out of control. But I love you both to death. Liz, we're sorry you can't be with us. We love you. Anthony, you're great as always. Yeah, that'll be, yeah, I'll send you $5. And Jeremiah, thank you so much for being with us. I hope to have you guys back. This is the one and only. This is the one thing you can count on. And that's every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Pop Culture Stars. See you guys next week.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Good night, everybody.
Big hugs, all. Thanks, guys.
No problem.
Okay. And we can keep talking until I run inside. Since I'm running the board,
yeah,
I got
to
get
way to be on you.
Now I was enjoying the cigar and the malt beverage outdoors, and now I'm back in front of my laptop. And
right.
Good night, everybody.
Way to
from
go.
This is not scripted.